Hello and welcome to this week's Opening Bell podcast. I'm Boxing News editor Tris Dixon, joined as always by Matt Christie. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, good.
I'm glad to hear that, because when we left last week's podcast, we did so on a cliffhanger, didn't we?
What about the old, was it about the shoulder?
Yeah, we can't even remember what you hurt now.
No, it's still there.
The shoulder, I'm glad to hear that.
But, I think it's easing. I think in a week's time, it's going to be old news.
Okay, good stuff. Talking of news, do you like that?
It's good.
Yeah, seamlessly into previews this week. You've had a good look at the Darren Barker, Daniel Gill fight. I've had a look at the Cleverley, Kovalev fight and the undercard. Disappointed when the Jonathan Thain, Ronnie Heffron fight fell off the undercard there, with Thain picking up a cut in sparring, so we're here. But the main event, Cleverley, Kovalev, I mean, it is a proper five-star fight, isn't it?
It really is, yeah, and it's one of those that we've spoke about before, but I'm going to be really interested to see what Kovalev's got. I think Cleverley, for all his faults, is as tough as they come, and I'm going to be seriously interested to see what Kovalev's got when it goes to the mid-rounds and beyond.
I think that's the key. I mean, although Kovalev is the bookie's favourite and Cleverley's come in slightly, I think he's now evens when he was sort of slightly odds out to finish second. The crucial thing is Kovalev basically a hype job, a bit like Jeff Lacy, or is he the next Golovkin or the next Matisse?
It's really hard to tell, isn't it, at this point? I mean, his record is very, very impressive. Stopping Gabriel Campillo is the obvious highlight there in just three rounds, who's extremely durable and capable competitor.
Although his heart might not be in it anymore.
Well, yeah, you could say that, but no one's ever done that to him, and he's fought since, and he's nothing like that happened to him. Cleverley, though, it's his acid test as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of really interesting facets to the fight. I mean, obviously Cleverley's not the biggest hitter, although he does hit quite stiffly. I mean, will he be able to keep Kovalev off? And I mean, when you know, I've watched quite a bit of tape of Kovalev, and he's very dangerous with both hands, but he is a little bit crude. He is a little bit stiff. He's not the most fluid fighter in the world with his feet or with his hands. And so there's a good chance that Cleverley can outbox him, and he does have the skills to do it. And this is a guy who, don't forget, is a hard Welshman. You know, he might sort of look a pretty boy, he might have been to university and all the rest of it, but this is a guy who learned a very, very hard, violent trade, as someone who we understand took some beatings in sparring from the likes of Joe Calzaghe and Enzo Macconelli, and that was when Enzo was a cruiser and Cleverley was boxing at super middle. You know, those are hard lessons that do benefit you when you're up against it later on in your career.
Yeah, I think what we will see, if it gets to that point in the fight, is Cleverley's heart. I think anybody that's doubted that. I mean, if I look back to that Caro Murat fight, which as Murat's career has progressed, looks better and better. He was up against it in that fight. He was taking some serious shots. He dug deep and he got Murat out of there. Had a tougher, probably, than expected outing against Bellew. And he prevailed. I understand why the bookies are making Kovalev favourite with his knockout ratio and what have you. But for me, I still go back to what they've done in their professional career so far, and Cleverley's achievements far outweigh those of the guy that's challenging him.
I mean, Cleverley beating Bellew and Murat. Well, Murat obviously had a very close fight with Campillo,
yeah,
which I think was a draw, if I yeah, remember rightly. And Cleverley, you know, widely beat, handsomely beat Murat, and then had a close fight with Bellew. But those, I'd say, are two better wins than the Campillo win.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, very interesting fight. There's also good stuff on the undercard. Enzo Macconelli up against Overeem McKenzie. Now, not many of our listeners will know. I'm not sure if it was one of your first fights, But you came with me to Frank Warren's Magnificent Seven show in Birmingham.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't. I think it was in the first year. It wasn't one of the first fights, but it was.
And you were there ringside with me, and I think I was covering the fight.
Yeah, you were.
Enzo Macronelli against Alexander Frankel, and where the hell's he gone, by the way? But Macronelli was violently taken out in a fight that should have been stopped, wasn't allowed to carry on. He was then wiped out. Erky Mernanen was the referee that night.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not sure, did you ever see yourself on TV that night?
I have seen it, but yeah, my head goes down, my hands come up, and I'm just, I just can't watch. It's to the point where Macronelli is blatantly shot to pieces in that fight. He's gone. And it's the way the referee grabs his hand and drags him back in. It was the act of an evil man. And Frankel swiftly came in and more or less he looked like
Polaxed him.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a surprise if Macronelli's head had landed in my lap. It was a vicious shot, and it was a horrible ending. And I remember Macronelli being out cold. I'd spoke to Enzo a few days before that as well. And he told me various things about his family, and all these things start going through your mind. It was horrible. And from that moment on, Enzo getting back in the ring, who am I to tell somebody not to, but from that moment on, it's been a concern to me that Enzo's career has continued.
Yeah, I mean, I've been ringside for his fights with Lebedev, Afolabi and Frankel, and they're three knockouts that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
You know, they're absolutely frightening knockouts. And it's fair to say that those shots that he was finished with would have probably wiped out most top fighters. But at the same time, that's three times it's happened. And you know, it doesn't look great. And obviously, he was badly shaken by Shane McPhilbin. And he just basically hasn't been the same fighter, is he? And I think he's dropped down at light heavyweight. His trainer, Gary Lockett, says he looks $1 million in the gym. But you know what? When I've been in America and I've seen some old fighters who are sort of knocking on 50 years old, they look great in the gym.
Yeah.
Still skipping, still, you know, they do what they do. I mean, look at Freddie Roach, prime example. You know, the guy puts on his body belt, takes his glasses off, gets in the ring and moves fluidly.
Yeah, yeah.
Take him out of the confines of the gym and stuff. And obviously, you can see his Parkinson's in black and white and stuff. You know, these people have trained themselves to look a certain way in the gym over a number of years. And they go in there and autopilot kicks in. And almost everything that they look like outside of the ring goes away, but people from the outside looking in, like us, can see it.
Yeah, I mean, you see John Scully as well, Boxing News columnist. He's regularly on Facebook updating about the fact he's been in the gym, he's done 10 rounds of sparring with some of the young kids, and he feels great. But ultimately, he knows that he can't, he'll never be able to reproduce his peak form. It does go. Having said all that about Enzo, the stoppage loss that was inflicted upon him by McKenzie, I can't remember who the referee was.
Ian John Lewis,
how could I forget, sorry. It was, I completely understand why Enzo wants another shot at that, but let's not forget what McKenzie's biggest strength is, his punching power.
I think the problem with that stoppage, and I mean, I'm sure we said it at the time, was that everyone was looking out for Enzo to be safe, and I think that's what Ian John Lewis was guilty of on the night. Trying to just make sure he was safe. But
I think that was it, yeah.
But I will say that Frankel knockout, when you were sat next to me, I had no idea that your head had plummeted into your hands. But it was like, it was almost like watching Bambi being thrown to the velociraptors in Jurassic Park, wasn't it? It was like Bambi sort of wistfully, you know, walking out into a motorway, really, wasn't it? And Frankel just drove straight through him like a truck.
Yeah, it was very upsetting.
So, yeah, it was horrendous. But still, so interesting fight. Where would your money go? Because they say the last thing to go is his punch. Macronelli's got proven pedigree in the past, not the fighter he was, and obviously hasn't really done a great deal at light heavyweight. Which way are you going?
I don't know. I mean, Macronelli, has he still got it in him to kind of box? Because he's a decent technician as well, Macronelli.
He didn't get the credit he was due for the Wayne Braithwaite.
No, that was a brilliant performance. Braithwaite was still useful.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's certainly got it. He's got the skills. Whether he can keep Ovil off him for the 12 rounds, I'm not sure. I would probably pick McKenzie. I would probably pick,
based on the theory you can't go out in the rain and not get wet, sort of thing.
Based on that, yeah.
Okay. Fascinating fight on the undercard. Really, really looking forward to seeing Stephen Smith challenge Gary Buckland. Really good fight. I mean, we're split in the office about who's going to win that. Obviously, I've done the preview in the magazine and on the app. Which way are you going for Swifty and Gary Buckland? Because the bookie, interestingly, I think Swifty was priced as far out as 4-1 recently. I think he's coming to threes, and I imagine that will come in a little bit closer nearer the fight.
I've always liked Swifty. Really, really neat and tidy boxer. Light, decent punch. Great amateur. And he had a few problems again, but he came up against John Simpson fairly early in his career. He had some problems with him. Both those fights could have gone either way, if memory serves me correctly. And then he came up against Selby, and that was a nasty knockout that he suffered in the end. And he was taking a steady beating as that fight progressed. Buckland doesn't carry that kind of power, I don't think, but he's a pressure fighter, isn't he? But he's also, having said that, he's only got the one punch power in there with the knockout of
Gary Sykes. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, that's the old adage, isn't it? With that one, I think he caught Sykes cold, and that was proved in the rematch, wasn't it? So, but that's not me trying to take anything away from Buckland. That's just somehow how the sport works.
But also, on the flip side, Buckland, I remember I was ringside when John Murray beat Buckland, and he took a quite a hefty beating. It was that kind of fight where you thought maybe he's not going to be the same again after that fight. And I remember I spoke to Ricky Hatton afterwards, and Ricky was like, yeah, I'd like to have seen it stopped a few rounds earlier. But Buckland has proved he's come back. Having said all that and getting off the fence, I fancy Smith could outbox him. Smith could win on points.
Difference could be the weight factor, couldn't it? Swifty going up from featherweight, really, and Buckland, who's been at lightweight, and bigger man. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how... Swifty's not a big chap, is he?
No, he's not.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's very, very interesting that they've made Buckland a clear favourite, because, I wouldn't say that's much beyond a 50-50 fight in my book.
Yeah.
So, okay, now we're heading over stateside to look at Darren Barker's bid for the world title. I spoke to Eddie Hearn before he left last week about Darren's chances, and basically he agreed with me that for Darren, who's now in his early 30s, it's pretty much now or never. Not many guys at the end of their career get two world title fights, two world title chances. And there's two aspects to this. Is one, Barker has been a real good ambassador for the sport, as Cleverly has, by the way. Should just add that. But Barker's been a very good ambassador for the sport, who's been driven by the loss of his brother, who was also a good amateur. as you playing with our app there. Matt, can you just leave the devices alone, please? Okay. And then secondly, Matt, you completely made me lose my train of thought. And with Barker, Barker having this second shot. Basically, I think if he's not going to beat Daniel Gill, he's not going to beat. I don't think. Obviously, he's already had his crack at Martinez. I can't see him beating Golovkin. This is basically his last shot at becoming a world champion. And the plus side on this for British fight fans is, should he win, it could finally unlock those big domestic fights with Martin Murray and Matthew Macklin.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you there. I mean, it's a tough ask for Barker, but arguably with Gill, it's the best chance that he's got of lifting the title. In Atlantic City, it's not an ideal setting for him, but you could also argue it's not an ideal setting for the champion either.
Well, yeah, it's not Australia, is it?
No.
From the start.
And Barker, when he's on form, and he has been since the injuries, to me he's added a bit more spite to his work. His boxing has been pretty sharp. When he's on form, he's a tough opponent for anyone in that division. He's certainly world class. I don't think it's beyond Barker for him to win this fight. I would not be remotely surprised if he won it. In the same token, Gill. He's quick. He's not devastating like Golovkin, but he throws a lot of punches. I would imagine he's a bit of a nightmare to face. He comes in from some unorthodox angles. I would say this is more of a pick-em fight than Klev Kovalev.
I mean, it's really interesting the way you've weighed up the Barker fight in the magazine this week, which I really enjoyed. I think there's something about Barker. My head says Gil, but there's something in my gut that says Barker's going to do it. There's always been something about Darren that made me think he'd get to the top. And I didn't think he'd get another chance after Martinez. And when I heard he had the Gil fight, almost it was like pieces of the last piece of the puzzle coming. Yeah. You know, something about Barker's story that makes me think he can do it. And I mean, that's not exactly great boxing reasoning.
No.
But sometimes it happens, doesn't it? I mean, I've recently been thinking about the Ricky Hatton Costa Zoo fight and how the stars aligned for him. And I'm somehow thinking that the stars are just aligning at the right time for Darren Barker.
Yeah. No, I completely hear you. I mean, I was torn, and I won't say which way that I went in the preview, but I was torn with who to go for, because I think it is that difficult a fight to pick. But when I broke it down into certain categories, that's ultimately how I came to the conclusion of the way that I went.
Yeah, okay.
William Hill, sponsors of the Opening Bell podcast. Bet £25 and get a £25 bet free. Bet now with williamhill.com.
So that's going on. And then just overseas, also in America, coming up this weekend, the man we talked about, Campillo, is up against Fonfara, who's a bit of a danger man in the division. Do you think Campillo's last stand, or do you think he's had his last stand and this is going to be, and you could see him getting cleaned out?
You've got to favour Fonfara in that fight. But Campillo, I don't think he's quite as far gone as some have suggested. I still think he feels like he's got a lot of unfinished business in the sport. I think his heart is still in it. And it's a decent scrap. I don't think Fonfara is anything like the danger man that Kovalev is or was. So I don't think Campillo is going to get stopped again, put it that way.
Okay, and then just also in action on Monday night, Danny Jacobs, Miracle Man. Astonishing story. You know, one of the most inspirational stories we'll probably have in our lifetimes covering boxing.
Yeah, it was, and it was lovely. I was out in Brooklyn when he kind of came back, and it was his first appearance. And the fight, to be fair, was a bit of a non-event. It was a bit of a mismatch, but you could just see how much it meant to Danny, and really sensational story, heartwarming. It's good to be around those kind of things in a sport that's often filled with quite the opposite.
Now, obviously, you've been flat out on the website, as always, this week. What have we got going on the site at the moment?
We have got quite a few things at the moment.
Glad to hear that, Matt.
I'm trying to think. There's really about 10 things that went up yesterday. I mean, what we are doing there is we're trying to update people on a regular basis with any kind of breaking news on the website, in an effort to kind of, you know, compete and be that all-round boxing service that we're trying to be. But you've got Deontay Wilder interview.
Oh, that sounds interesting, man. Yeah, Who's done that?
I believe it was you, Tris, who did that.
Hey,
Hot on the heels of the most read article last week, which was David Price, and again, that was yours. Well done.
You know, I really wasn't going to bring that up, but thanks for doing it. No, do you know what? I obviously spoke to Deontay Wilder for the column this week, and there's some opinion there on his fight with Sergei Lakovic, which we'll go on to in a while. In fact, that's quite a nice segue for us. We'll go on to that in a sec. But Deontay Wilder, talk about you couldn't meet two more different characters or two guys in a more different frame of mind than David Price one week and Deontay Wilder the next. And I'd implore anyone who's listening to this or watching it on BNTV, because you can watch these on BNTV as well. I'd implore you to read, if you haven't read the Price one, have a look at that. Really frank stuff from David Price. And then, just when you think it's, you know, all doom and gloom and despair, have a look at Deontay Wilder and you will look at someone moving in a complete opposite direction. So bubbly, so excited, calling out the Klitschkos, ready for this, ready for that. Really on a crest of a wave. Two completely different mindsets within a week of each other. Just astonishing, really. And it shows the thin line between success and failure and what difference one fight can make. Wilder, you know, while we're on the subject, was devastating against Sergei Lakovic, wasn't he? I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen someone go down and basically, or for a shot to have that kind of effect on a fighter.
Yeah, and when it landed, it wasn't an obvious devastating shot, was it? But the power was clearly there from the effect it had on Lakovic. And yeah, I mean, I think we're, you know, let's keep things in perspective here. He knocked out a guy who ruled. He had a WBO belt best part of a decade ago, and he hadn't scored a meaningful win since then. However, nobody's ever done that to Lajakovic before. Sensational finish. And I am, to be honest with you, I am really, really looking forward to see where Wilder goes. It's easy to hang on to the fact that he's crude, that, you know, he's just kind of this raw, unfinished article, but... And without saying he's going to be the next George Foreman, such accusations were levelled at George Foreman, and they stopped when he lifted Joe Frazier off his feet and won the world heavyweight title. I'm not saying Wilder's going to go on to do that, but I've got more belief in Deontay Wilder than, say, somebody like a Michael Grant, who came along and was exposed by Lennox Lewis. There's a lot more work to do. He's got to fight somebody who can give him some rounds, which seems like it's going to be quite a tricky job. And we'll see what happens, but I think we should start paying Deontay Wilder some attention.
I think the thing you mentioned about Wilder needing to get some rounds and some experience under his belt, he actually bristled at the suggestion. You can see that in the interview. I don't think he liked the question particularly much. It's clearly something that he has to face up with people saying, "Oh, well, you've never been hit. You're rough. You're rough and ready. You're crude." And I put all that stuff to him, and he didn't like it. But his answers were very colourful and forthright, and as you always get with Wilder. And it does make for compelling reading. It really does, because this is a guy who's after 29 knockouts and 29 wins, feels he's bulletproof.
Yeah. Yeah, and you understand why as well. I mean, when you're knocking people out like that, you're gonna start to feel a little bit invincible, aren't you? I think, you know, they're talking about perhaps the winner of the Areola-Seth Mitchell fight. That makes sense, but you could... Again, would either of those two give him the rounds that he needs? Areola, perhaps?
Yeah, I'd say Areola more than Mitchell, really.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's not like... I mean, even in the 1980s, when there's kind of a lot of ex-champions rolling around, like your Bone Crusher Smiths, your Tim Witherspoons, your Tony Tubbs, your Greg
Pages. You love those days, didn't you?
Yeah, but there was always those kind of measuring sticks for prospects to kind of... As even going into the 90s, there were a lot of guys, you know, that were around. I mean, is Oliver McCall too old now to roll out and test his concrete chin on Wilder's fists?
God, yeah. Jeez, I wouldn't like to see that. Not at all. I would have liked to have seen it 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean. Even though Wilder was still an amateur then, but... You know what I mean.
I'm hearing you.
So just a little bit of comment. There was an interesting fight in New York this week. Hector Camacho Jr. And Lee Murta. Camacho Jr., absolute disgrace.
Well, he's over and over again, Camacho Jr. has let himself down with his preparation. Certainly gifted, certainly took after his father in that respect, in that he's a very, very good boxer. Didn't seem to have his father's courage in the ring at times, and without wishing to kind of to knock him too much. But there's absolutely no excuse to turn up for a fight that much overweight. It's not like it's a surprise. It's not like the date is just all of a sudden thrown at you. You know full well when the fight is. And if you can't get in shape for it, and you know you're not going to be in shape for it, then it's bad manners to the opponent and to the sport to turn up looking like that.
Yeah, okay. Couldn't agree more. And I mean, I think it's downright dangerous. The difference in weight between the fighters, you know, there's no way that... If I'd been a commissioner, I wouldn't let them go anywhere near each other. And I don't think there was even any penalties in the purses. I mean, I might be wrong, but I don't think there was any penalties, which is staggering, really. I mean, just pleased that Lee Murta came through it with the credit that he did.
Well, there was no... I mean, I know we had an interview with Lee up on the website a couple of weeks beforehand, and he was buzzing for that fight. You know, it was a fight over in America against a... Okay, not a massive name, but
a name nonetheless.
But a name, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was no way, I think, if Camacho had come in 50 pounds overweight, Murta would have pleaded for the chance to have a scrap with him.
Yeah. Now, really interesting stuff from America this week. And I think he's going to start writing a column for us in the next week or so. Ashley Theophane has signed a deal with the Money Team to be promoted by the Money Team. And he's got a golden ticket. It's like Willy Wonka and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got a golden ticket. He's got an appearance on the big Floyd Mayweather-Sal Alvarez bill on September 14th. The price of a spot on that bill is being matched with tough Mexican puncher Pablo Cesar Cano, who have you seen in the flesh?
Yeah, I've seen him.
Saw him fight Malignaggi.
Saw him fight Malignaggi, yeah.
And so he's got Theophane. I mean, it's a tough fight for Ashley, isn't it, on a big, big stage?
It's a really, really tough fight for Ashley. But you know what? I think it wouldn't surprise me if he did it. I think Ashley, I mean, he's obviously delighted with this, but he almost kind of throws one finger up to some British fans that really haven't got behind him. And I think Ashley's one of those characters. If you just read his words on a page, as opposed to you're conversing with him, he can come across as quite arrogant. But he's, you know, you speak to him, he's very personable, good guy to talk to, fascinating guy, knows his boxing. But I think he's always had this issue where, you know, I'm the man. And let's face it, okay, he won the British title. He's never actually proved it in the ring. He's never actually proved that he's as good as he's always said he is.
Well, I think the problem with Ashley is he just seems to be a different animal in America.
Yeah.
He seems to be so much more up for everything over there. And it must be being driven by the competition. Now, I know, obviously, I never went pro and wasn't even that good. But I remember when I was training in America and I was training in good gyms around good fighters. You know, when I was in Atlantic City, the Klitschkos were there. When I went out to Pleasantville, I was training with Ray Mercer, Kennedy McKinney, Virgil Hill. In upstate New York, there were some good young pros coming through like Jay Krupp and Leonard Pierre. And you really raise your game. You do. And I felt like I was a different fighter over there. And I came back, went to my old amateur club, as Ashley does. He goes to the All-Stars in London. And I flopped and I just couldn't do anything. You know, over there, in front of all those big names, you know, I was doing three-minute rounds on the pads and all the rest of it. I came back and I was boxing two-minute rounds like I was in treacle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's that motivation, it's that driving force. And once you've got that, and obviously he's there training with Ishae Smith and he's sparring with Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know, you raise your game umpteen percent.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because you want to impress people. That's the be-all and end-all, and you don't want to look out of place.
Exactly.
And it's really interesting what Ashley's done. I can tell you a little story about Ashley, actually. I was over in Vegas for the Mayweather-Guerrero fight earlier in the year, as you know, and I was walking around the MGM Grand with Coogan Cassius from iFilm London, and we saw Ashley Theophane, and he was with some American guys who didn't know Coogan or myself from Adam, and me and Coogan ran up to Ashley like two starstruck teenagers, saying, "Oh, Ashley, can we have your autograph? We've come all the way from England to see you. You know, we've been hoping to see you." And Ashley, who obviously knew us well, looked completely bewildered and amazed, thinking, "What the heck are these guys doing?" And these are the American guys, who I don't know if they knew Ashley well or not, but they were like, "Wow, this guy must be really big in the UK." And then he ended up sort of high-fiving Coogan, and we sort of confessed that we already knew him, and the moment passed. But still, anyway, you know, good luck to Ashley. It's boxing's a lonely life, and I bet that guy who's had a nomadic lifestyle for the last few years has been bloody lonely on the road in New York, sleeping in bedsits, staying in gyms, trying to meet all the different fighters. It's not easy to make your way over there and, you know, let alone pay for everything and do everything the way that he does. The guy, you know, serious kudos to him. He's given up everything, whatever he's got in this country, he's given it up and gone over there to live the dream. And it can't be easy. Can't be easy when you're sparring Floyd Mayweather. It's got to be enjoyable on a professional level, but it's also got to be painful.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, full credit to him. I just don't think he does get enough credit for doing what he's done. But then there is quite a UK-centric look at British fighters, in that we all want the big British fights, don't we? We're quite selfish in that respect. And that's obviously something that Ashley never really wanted.
No, he hasn't, and he admits himself that he finds it hard to get up for the fights in Britain. I think what it is, we'd seen this guy out in America. He ran Danny Garcia really close. I think he beat Delvin Rodriguez out in America.
Close on points.
He didn't show that kind of form. Because he looked on the fringes of the world top 10, and he looked far from the fringes of the world top 10. Okay, he won the British title, which is a fantastic achievement, but he didn't look like a world-class fighter when he was defending it over here.
No, fair enough. And I think, you can put that down to motivation. I really think that, having tried to do something similar, I think I'm sort of quite well placed to know how Ashley ticks, to be honest. And we've got some common ground in that respect. I think just in closing, just final assessment really for Barker and Cleverley. I mean, would it be a stupid bet to put money on a Cleverley Barker double?
No, of course it wouldn't. No, I think that they've both got very, very realistic chances of winning. I think we know what Gill can do, we know what Barker can do, and certainly you can make a very, very strong case for Barker. I think that the thing with this fight is seeing how Kovalev copes. For me, I haven't seen enough of Kovalev at world level to be convinced that he can do that against Cleverley. He's one of those he could walk in and knock Cleverley out in the third round.
Yeah.
It could be one of those statement fights. Yeah. It could be one of those which you've seen throughout history, which happens every year. It could be one of those performances that we're about to witness.
Yeah, I think just in closing about Cleverley and Barker, I did mention that they're two great ambassadors for the sport. One's come back from serious personal tragedy to hit very nearly the top of the sport. Cleverley, who's obviously a maths graduate at university, well spoken, polite, nice mannered chap. They're both really good role models.
Yeah.
And we've got a very, very interesting feature with the two of them in the magazine this week, where we've asked them the same questions, we've got their responses, and they sort of come across as perfect gents, really, don't they?
Yeah, and that's what they are. Well, that's what they seem to be, as well as we know them. That's what they are. They are, and it's a really interesting read. Before we do finish, if we could just mention the plight of Bob Shannon's gym at the moment, which is quite a sad story. It got broken into 2 weeks ago when Bob was taking some very, very rare time off. Thieves came here, they took a lot of copper piping, and the council have since shut it due to safety reasons, and Bob is convinced that it won't reopen unless the council can be convinced that it's a worthwhile venture. There is a story on our website where Bob explains it, goes into detail, and there's also a link there to a petition that people can sign that the council will see, and if they get so many names on that petition, then the council may rethink their plans.
Okay, so yeah, we wish Bob well with that. And also we wish the guys well at the Fifth Street Gym
of course,
in Miami,
yeah.
Which was ransacked. So hopefully those guys can all get back on their feet and start returning to business as normal in the near future. So that's us done for this week. Next week I will be reporting from Wales, where I would have been ringside to watch Cleverley against Kovalev. Just can't say how much I'm looking forward to the bill, to be honest, and getting out there.
Yeah.
Good bill in Wales, where I'm sure the crowds will be out for Clev, and obviously we'll be having a look at Barker overnight. Hopefully I'll be back in time to see Barker lacing him up and get his second crack at a world title. So until next week, and Matt, there's no cliffhangers, no sort of bodily functions about to fail in the next couple of weeks.
Don't rule it out.
No. Well, there we go. There's this week's cliffhanger. Let's hope Matt's still in one piece next week. So, all right, guys, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week.